We've got Anthony Scaramucci, a former Golden employee who will now serve as a senior White House advisor. Dina Habib-Powell, who heads charitable efforts for the firm. She'll be a senior counselor for economic initiatives. And then we have the Daily News explaining that they'll join White House Chief Strategist Steve Bannon, National Economic Council Chairman appointee Gary Cohn, and Securities and Exchange Commission Chairman nominee Jay Clayton as top Trump appointees who held senior Goldman positions.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome, friends. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com, in a conversation that's being recorded on the 1st of February 2017, here on this side of the dateline, but on the other side of the dateline, all the way on the left coast of the United States, we are joined today by Carrie Widler, who I hope will be familiar to some of my audience, but if not, please familiarize yourself by going to theantimedia.org, and you can find her archives of articles there. She also has a YouTube page, which will be linked in the show notes along with everything else for today's conversation, which is going to be about a very interesting article that was posted at the Antimedia back in on January 13th, back when we were in the midst of that Russia hacked the election fake news meme that was spreading around then. Do you remember that? It seems like forever ago already. But back then, she posted this article. Actually, Goldman Sachs hacked the presidential election, which I think is a very good way of putting it. So let's bring her on to talk about that. Carrie, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on.
Excellent. Well, what a provocative title. Goldman Sachs hacked the presidential election. What do you mean by that?
Well, I do have to credit my editor-in-chief, Nick Burnaby, with that title, although we're talking about, you know, it was this hysteria about Russia hacking the election, which, as you mentioned, it seems like old news. It seems like it's just been accepted by everybody now. Even Donald Trump hasn't spoken much about Russia. But at the time, we were sort of just trying to draw attention to the real forces at play here, because, yes, we can talk about Russia all we want and that it's an existential threat, and we can say they hacked the election by allegedly releasing or providing whatever they did. I'm not even clear on what the narrative is because it's not clear. But if we're really looking for who controls things, it's not Russia. It's the bankers. And so that's sort of how we came up with the idea, because it's one thing to say they hacked emails, but it's another thing to look at all of the levels of government they have permeated and how much influence they now wield as a result of that.
Exactly right. Yes. And that's something that I would hope my audience doesn't need a lot of elaboration on. We've talked about government sacks and their population of various parts of the U.S. government over previous administrations many times. And as you point out in this article, quite rightly, it didn't really matter whether Trump or Clinton won. Goldman Sachs were betting on both horses, as they always do, and as the bankers do in wartime and everywhere else. Bet on both sides, and it doesn't matter who wins. The bankers still win. So, of course, Hillary Clinton had heavy donations from Goldman Sachs, and, of course, also got the speaking fees, hundreds of thousands of dollars for her appearances with Goldman Sachs that were eventually leaked by WikiLeaks, and I did do some reporting on that. But they were also, as is now events have borne out, also in bed with Donald Trump, specifically in terms of the people that he has appointed to his cabinet. And you go through this and document this in this article. Let's talk about some of the people, Goldman Sachs bankers, who are now part of the Trump administration.
Sure. Well, one that I like to start with is Steven Mnuchin. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right, but he seems like a little bit more benign. He wasn't at the top of Goldman Sachs leadership, but he was very much entrenched in Wall Street. And I find it interesting because he then went on to finance American Sniper and then had shady financial dealings in the film industry as well and sort of screwed over the production company he was working for. So I find it very interesting that Donald Trump, who sort of straddled Hollywood by using it to get famous and didn't quite take money from Goldman Sachs, but has now allowed them into his administration. It seems fitting, I guess, that he would bring on Mnuchin. But he's very much, in my opinion, the least of our worries. The biggest one for me is Gary Cohn, who's currently chief operating officer at Goldman Sachs. He was supposed to be successor. So I think it says something that Goldman has taken their next CEO, someone who is expected to be leading the company, and they've now shipped him off to be an advisor for Donald Trump. And the thing is, they didn't even have to pay Donald Trump. He's just doing this of his own accord. And for me, and I'd love to get your opinion on it, actually, is a lot of Trump supporters argue the same Mitt Romney line. You've got to have business experts if you want to have, you know, success in government. Maybe, but that's sort of what Obama did and what Bush did, and we ended up here. So I'm curious, is Trump just stupid? Does he actually think, you know, because he, I don't want to say stupid, well, whatever. But does he actually think, because he comes from a business background, that this is a wise decision? Or are there things going on behind the scenes that we're just not privy to and there are deals being made?
Well, I can't and don't claim to speak for Trump himself, but I think that you are evidently correct, as you point out there, and as you point out in the article, people who make that argument that, well, you got to have bankers running the banks because you can't put a plumber in charge of it, well, that's the exact approach that Barack Obama took in his administration. And you point out even Rahm Emanuel, his original chief of staff, was on the Goldman payroll even during his time in the Clinton administration, let alone later on. A fact that I didn't even know until you pointed that out. Again, Goldman Sachs bankers were very much a part of the Barack Obama administration, and we all know how that turned out in terms of prosecuting the banks, i.e. not at all. So what are the chances that we're going to see real and true regulation, or at least just holding people accountable for their actions in an administration that's so heavily infested by Goldman bankers? And it isn't just Mnuchin and Cohn. There are other Goldman bankers in Trump's cabinet.
Mm-hmm. If you like, I can quote the Daily News, which I cited in my article. We've got Anthony Scaramucci, a former Goldman employee who will now serve as a senior White House advisor. Dina Habib-Powell, who heads charitable efforts for the firm. She'll be a senior counselor for economic initiatives. And then we have the Daily News explaining that they'll join White House Chief Strategist Steve Bannon, National Economic Council Chairman appointee Gary Cohn, and Securities and Exchange Commission Chairman nominee Jay Clayton as top Trump appointees who held senior Goldman positions. So this is a whole team. And I think the biggest point for me is, as you mentioned, had Clinton gotten into office, it would have been the same thing. Barack Obama did the same thing. Had Mitt Romney or John McCain won either of those years, it would have been the same thing, because Goldman Sachs has been lining all of their pockets. And it's just, in my opinion, an insurance policy plan to make sure that no matter what happens, they have some semblance or some degree of control over governance, which, as I learned from your documentary on the Federal Reserve, is even more shocking to me because they already have control of the money supply. So the fact that they still need to go and they still want to be regulating and to be controlling the government itself, which they already control through the Fed, is just mind-boggling and as much total control as I could imagine of the financial sector.
That's right. And as you point out in the article, 4 of the 12 Federal Reserve Board of Governors come from Goldman Sachs. So again, no surprise there. And it isn't just Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs, of course, is a very key player on Wall Street these days and very much embedded in the government. But it is all of the big banks together that wield this inordinate amount of power over these positions. And it really does present the question, as you point out, Clinton would have done the same thing. Obama did the same thing. Bush did the same thing. Trump is doing the same thing. What is the answer to this, then? What can we possibly do? It's almost as if having these centralized positions of control over the banking industry is inevitably going to lead to banking control over the banking industry.
Who would have guessed? You know, I found it interesting because when Trump was interviewing people after he got elected, he did speak to, I believe his name is John Allison. I know his last name is Allison. And he's someone who's advocated scaling back the Fed. I'm not sure if he's outright advocated ending it. He might have. But definitely an opponent of the Fed, which I found interesting. Of course, it doesn't mean Trump is going to listen to him in any way. And I don't really expect any Republican lawmakers to really put forth a substantive audit. And if they did, Rand Paul is sort of turning out to be a bit of a not as principled as some people wanted him to be. That's all I'll say. He's our best chance, I guess. Maybe Bernie, but Bernie sort of didn't follow through. He wasn't as sincere with the audit the Fed bill as we would have liked him to be. So it's a bit difficult to discern what we're going to do moving forward. I think competing currencies are really important, but we're now seeing Wall Street sort of trying to usurp those and suck that up into their establishment. So your guess is probably better than mine.
Well, as you point out, unfortunately, a lot of the banks are now playing with blockchain technology, but of course, private blockchains that they control, that they'll use on their end to make their transactions easier and to facilitate across international borders, but it won't be for the end user if they have their way. So yes, I think you're right. I mean, I think ultimately this involves the decentralization of the concept of banking itself, which is changing now and could be harnessed. The incredible technological power we have can be harnessed to take this monopoly of money control away from the banksters. But I just don't think it's going to come from politics. I don't think politicians are going to hand us that on a silver platter. So it's up to us to make that happen. On that note, let's talk about some of the work that you do at Nanti Media and the types of issues that you cover.
Sure, I'd love to. I started with Anti-Media back in 2014. I joined as a journalist after one of the other journalists interviewed me actually for a video I made where I burned an Obama shirt because I am a former Obama supporter. I wasn't paying attention when he was appointing the head of the New York Fed to be his Secretary of the Treasury. I just, right over my head, figured it out. A couple of years later, I made that video and ended up at Anti-Media. And it's my dream job, honestly, because we are beholden to no one. We have no corporate interests. We have no funding from anybody. We're all activists. And we were all actually inspired by Ron Paul. So we're all very aware of the banking oligarchy. That's sort of how we all got started. We can all thank Ron Paul for getting us going, although we've all evolved. But that's the cool thing is that it's a non-ideological organization. We have a very strict, like, we don't go around proselytizing. We're not trying to convince anybody of any ideology per se. We're just trying to wake people up to the realities, and we're trying to spread the information. And of course, we advocate decentralization. We definitely lean towards anarchy. That's if I had to label us something, you can look at our label and see our logo and you'll see that that's what it comes down to. But it's really peace, love. We're just trying to make a better world, and we're trying to be a part of that change by establishing independent media. And I'm loving it. We cover police brutality, we cover mass surveillance, we cover obviously economic issues. Foreign policy is huge for us. We're really big on covering what's happening in Syria right now. And it looks like Trump is set to carry on exactly what Obama and Hillary would have done, or what Obama was doing. So that's just another example of how he's just furthering the establishment. But we're having a good time covering all these things. He's giving us plenty of content, as are all of the other lawmakers, and just the general hysteria going on in the country right now. But we reach a lot of people every month. We're reaching millions of people. And I credit that to obviously the work that all of the people I work with do, but also just people really seeking out that information now, which is pretty promising, and we're optimistic about it.
Well, I share that optimism. I do see more people who are questioning the narrative now that it's become so utterly ridiculous in the mainstream fake news establishment. So I'm glad that there are entities like the Anti-Media out there. We'll direct people once again to the site in general and to your article in particular, again, linked in the show notes. Actually, Goldman Sachs hacked the presidential election. And as you point out there, you also make YouTube videos, sometimes very politically and ideologically provocative videos, but thoughtful ones nonetheless. So we will direct people to your YouTube channel as well. Carrie Wedler, thanks for coming on. I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Federal Reserve, the heart of the American banking system. For over 100 years, it has operated in the shadows, controlling America's money supply in total secrecy.
So all that information is available in our commercial paper
program. And who got the money?
Hundreds and hundreds of banks, any bank or that has access to the U.S. Federal Reserve's discount.
Tell us who they are.
No.
Until now.
100 years ago, in 1913, the Fed was created.
Fractional reserve banking.
The legal authority to do it.
Takeover of monetary policy.
Are conducted by the Federal Reserve Banks. They are banks.
There is no other agency of government which can overrule actions that we take.
Century of Enslavement, the history of the Federal Reserve. Watch the documentary for free at corbettreport.com/Federal Reserve. And purchase a copy on DVD to help support the Corbett Report today.